not an MP or a cabinet minister.
That's a pretty big difference. But sure, when people get their back up and they feel publicly wronged in some way, they fire back with something impetuous. What is the right thing to do? You say you're sorry. Again, it took you dragging it out into the public for that to happen. But this outcome, it ain't the wrong outcome. This is not the wrong way for either the Liberal Party or for Chartrand to handle it, especially if you want it to be dealt with and move on. It ain't the wrong way for this to go. Like, I kind of feel like we're leaving this in a place where we did our job and she did hers.
Yeah, you know? Kind of.
We found a couple of things that people should know about, and she took responsibility for it. It kind of seems like on to the next caper, Scooby-Doo. All right, Julian, have a good weekend.
Hey, you have a good weekend, too.
That is your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. This episode was reported by Julian Abraham. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. This episode was fact-checked by Max Collins, who is also our director of audio. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called Syndication. It's handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about how Canada has decoupled from the U.S. politically. Down in the States, like, center-left Democrats are out in the wilderness, very low support, while those on the furthest left of mainstream politics, their popularity is surging.
You know, I used to talk about oligarchy, and people say, what is he talking about? Everybody knows what I'm talking about tonight.
Meanwhile, up here, it's the exact opposite. Wait for that. Cenk Uygur, host of The Young Turks, welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
The Democratic Party is, quote, lost in the wilderness with no clear leader of the party.
There will be a time when the NDP will come back under new leadership and with new ideas, but right now it is a gong show.
Tom's right. It's the wilderness.
A very fractured, divided, defeated, and devastated Democratic Party.
But right now the NDP are floundering. It really does seem like an extremely internally divided party.
It's undeniable that the Democratic Party needs reimagining.
The new Democratic Party going forward, I think we are going to rebuild as a party.
With many Americans feeling there's no plan, there's no strategy, and they don't really like the message.
The NDP have no leader, they've got no money. They cannot fight an election, I would say, for 3 or 4 years.
Cenk, as you just heard, these days when the American media talks about the Democrats out in the wilderness, no support, no narrative, not a clue, it sounds almost identical to how Canadian media is talking about the NDP, the New Democratic Party. Can I explain something weird that has happened with Canadian politics? I have no idea what level of awareness you have of Canadian politics. I don't know why you would. Canadians are obsessed with American politics. We watch more than our own. We know your politicians more than we know our own. It's just part of being Canadian. And I don't hold it against Americans. I don't know much about, like, municipal politics in Kentucky, right?
Yeah, I want to know more.
All right. Here's my summary that many people will yell at me about, but this is how I see things. Like, we just mirror you guys. And it makes sense because we're always paying attention to your elections more than our own and your politicians more than our own, as I say. So our politics tend to just pick up on whatever trends everybody is already aware of. So, for example, you had Obama.
I've never been more hopeful about our future. I have never been more hopeful about America.
And then we followed with our own young, smiley, hopey, changey, sunny, inclusive, neoliberal, centrist guy in a slim suit with Justin Trudeau.
This is what positive politics can do. This is what a positive, hopeful vision and a platform and a team together can make happen.
That was our version. You had Trump.
Everything's broken about it. Everything.
We then have our own nasty, name-calling, anti-woke conservative telling us that everything used to be glorious before the liberals ruined everything.
Everything feels broken. No, after 8 years of Justin Trudeau, everything is broken.
Ours is called Pierre. So it's just like very predictable. But then, like, something weird just happened. Something very chaotic and unexpected. And like most things chaotic and unexpected, it really just happened because of Trump. Because we were just mirroring your politics again. What happened with Trudeau was very similar. It was looking similar to what was happening with Biden. You got an incumbent who stays too long, doesn't leave enough runway, doesn't set up a successor, and the electorate looks like they are not in any kind of mood to give another term. That was what was supposed to happen here.
This is a dream scenario for Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives. He's got a 20-point advantage, and the Progressives are perfectly split.
But then the Trump chaos factor, Trump inexplicably, I don't know why, starts talking about annexing Canada, starts talking about the 51st state, and that was poison for Maple Trump.
He looks too much like Trump. He sounds too much like Trump. Uses the lexicon of Trump. Yeah. You can't look and sound like the orange bull down south.
You know this story, some form of it leading to Mark Carney reversing things completely, this incredibly dramatic reversal. What I want to talk about with you is what that did to the far left in Canadian politics, whatever you want to call it, the progressive left or the radical socialist policies. I think a lot of people in the NDP will say that they stand for socialist policies. But this is where we decoupled from you. So now that you've got your Democrats are out in the wilderness, they don't know how to talk to people anymore, and they're talking about rebuilding, just no one knows what they are. And for us, it was the New Democratic Party that just got annihilated.
After a historic collapse of the federal NDP, the party is looking to rebuild itself under new leadership.
They lost their official party status, and that is how we get to this place where the coverage seems identical. Canada is mirroring the U.S. once again, but it's like a warped funhouse mirror. Because, and this is what I want to ask you about, the actual progressive left in the States is not out in the wilderness. Like, the only signs of hope that I'm reading about when it comes to the Democratic Party or the left in America is from your equivalent of the NDP, which would be, in a two-party system like yours, the furthest left establishment politicians, so your Bernie Sanders and your AOC.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are crisscrossing the western states for what they're calling a fighting oligarchy tour. The two politicians were in Los Angeles over the weekend, attracting a massive crowd. And their mission for this tour, encouraging communities to fight against President Trump's policies.
Can you tell us about what's happening around the country when Sanders and AOC come to town?
Yeah, I will. And there is an important distinction there, but there's a distinction that a lot of people don't understand or realize within the progressive movement. But before I do that, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Did NDP focus on culture wars and identity politics or no in Canada?
Again, this is going to be debatable. I think that the general thrust was they lost Labour, okay? And yes, they certainly did have a certain amount of messaging that made it possible to dismiss them as culture warriors that were obsessed with these, with identity politics issues.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's perfectly analogous because I don't know enough about NDP, right? So, but I'll tell you the experience in America. Progressives are split now. And so 2016 Bernie was all about economic populism. That's what I signed up for. That's what I love. That's what the country loves. One of the biggest, most miraculous uprisings in American political history. Right. Then in 2020, it went a little bit progressives and including Bernie to some degree. In his case, it was pretty obvious that it was begrudging. But nevertheless, they went more towards identity politics. And the country hates that.
Mm-hmm.
So 2020 Bernie, even though he won the first three states, was in some ways weaker than 2016 Bernie that had the huge rise. So now Bernie's back to saying no. Screw identity out of politics. We're not doing that anymore, okay? So thank God, and I'm in that camp. So here in America, if you talk about the economic portion of progressives' policies, then you get the Bernie Sanders AOC tour that they've been doing. 20,000, 30,000, 36,000 people all across the country because they have an answer. Now, I'm going to come back to that answer in a second. If you talk anything about identity politics, it's supernova toxic here. No, that's the part of the Democratic Party that's dead, dead, dead. And even the biggest culture wars, which, by the way, was kind of AOC, is now saying, no, culture wars, I don't know anything about it. I don't do identity politics.
Right.
And she's running from the building with her hair on fire, right? So her switch on that is a pretty good indication of where the country stands and which way our politics is going. So if you do identity politics, it's, and there's still a whole bunch of people who do, but they missed the memo. Like, yeah, it might get your some portion of your base excited, but that is not going to win any general elections, okay? The jury's come in.
Because you're micro-marketing. You're talking to niche special interests one at a time that are not even necessarily uniform. You talk to one, you might alienate the other. Whereas the big persuasive Bernie Sanders message, as I understand it, was let's put all of this aside because this is about class and it's about money and it's about income inequality. And everything else just keeps us from putting a united front together because they're certainly united on the other side.
We have a nation which is now run by a handful of greedy billionaires. You know, I used to talk about oligarchy and people say, what is he talking about? Everybody knows what I'm talking about tonight.
And that message is getting massive turnout.
Yeah, and it makes sense because the one thing that the American people haven't tried is populist left. So they tried establishment right, establishment left. Both of those suck. They are the ones that brought us this current status quo that is miserable. It's corporate rule. It's the uniparty. Then they tried fake populist right in Trump, and he's a disaster. And he doesn't know what he's doing, and he's not an actual populist. He's like, oh, I have a great populist idea. Why don't we do a $4 trillion tax cut for the rich? I'm like, yeah, that's not populist at all. Why don't we deregulate all corporations so they could hurt their employees and their communities? No, that's not populist at all, at all. It's totally corporate rule. He's the same old kind of greasy politician that we always had. So people are thirsty for God's sake, is anybody actually going to look out for us, the voters? And that has been Bernie 2016, right? That has been Bernie's core throughout. And notice the tour's not stop white supremacy. That would have been identity politics. And nobody would have gone to that tour, right? It stopped the oligarchy, which is economic and class-based. Everybody goes to that tour. And what I did is I set up Rebellion PAC. So money out of politics, anti-corruption, anti-war, higher wages, lower drug prices, lower housing prices, and paid family leave. All of these proposals are super popular. Why don't Democrats do their most popular proposals? There, I fixed it. So I think that'll work. I think we'll win elections, etc. And by the way, there's a real answer to that, Jesse. The reason why they don't do it is because they're actually corporate goons and they're lying. The Democratic establishment and leadership never wanted to do any of those bills. They all wanted to do what their donors wanted. They know those things are popular. That's why they use them for marketing purposes. But since they've gone in and not done them 18 times over, people are sick of them and they don't believe them. And they think that if you give Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries 1,000 years, they won't even pass paid family leave that polls at 84% because they don't care. They don't care about the voters at all. They're obsessed with the donors.
After the break, we will hear why Cenk says he is banned from mainstream media in the U.S. and what the Canadian left can learn from Bernie Sanders and AOC. Well, I mean, my broad stroke understanding of what's happened the last 20, 30 years in American politics is just that, is that as Democrats became increasingly estranged from just sort of like what a classical left political platform would be, that is there to represent normal people against big moneyed interests, that basically rolled out the carpet for Trump to come in. And whether or not his message is credible or not, he at least had a pitch to regular people. He at least was saying, okay, I see that you're suffering. I'm not going to try to tell you that you're a good person if you vote for me. I'm going to try to tell you that you're going to get richer than you were. We're going to stop this very demonstrable decline that working people in America have had. I wondered about that a lot because it seems so obvious that you have better solutions for people out of your possible menu of policies on the left and on the right that could benefit people. Why don't you just put together a platform that actually benefits people more? And I wondered if that's because that's not actually what they want to do, because that's not actually what they're there for.
A, that's 100% right. B, that's why I'm hated by mainstream media. I'm banned on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News. And so why? Did I do anything radical? No, I hate radicals, right? So why is a guy like me hated by mainstream media? Because I point out things that are obvious that the American people know, and media has been trying to hide from the American people with all of their might, which is that the politicians are crooks, They take donor money and they serve donor money, and I can prove it. So Joe Biden said that paid family leave would be easy, public option would be easy, higher minimum wage would be easy. And he said, oh, we're going to do that right away.
What are you going to do about minimum wage?
We're going to raise it to $15 an hour nationally.
And then in the first COVID relief bill, what's the first thing he took out? Higher wages, the higher minimum wage. He took that out, not the Republicans. And so he never meant it. He was a liar. Because why? His corporate donors told him, don't you dare raise minimum wage. Are you crazy? You work for me. And he said, yes, sir, absolutely, sir. Nothing will fundamentally change, sir. And then paid family leave.
We've just confirmed multiple sources telling us that the paid leave provision of this bill will not be included. It has been dropped from negotiations, dropped from the legislation because of opposition from Senator Joe Manchin.
I keep harping on it because it's, if you can't pass a bill that's at 84% popularity, that means either you are the worst politician who has ever lived, or you're not trying to pass it. And that's a stone cold fact. You can't tell me, oh, golly gee, it's at 84, but I'm such a moron, I don't know how to pass it, right? And then the last part of it is the public option.
CNBC is now reporting that Joe Biden's new American Families Plan does not include the promised expansion of Medicare eligibility, and it doesn't include a provision allowing the program to negotiate prices directly with drug companies.
Again, it's a layup. It's sitting there in the 70s and 80s, right? It's not universal health care, which every other developed nation has. It's like a tiny stepping stone. He didn't even propose it. They're liars. They don't mean it. That's why you've got to pick people from our wing of the Democratic Party. That's why I started Rebellion Pack.
Is that going to happen, Jake? Because when the party really interfered and with the Sanders campaign to make sure that he was not the candidate, I thought, wow, they would rather lose than change.
Yeah.
And they've lost. It took a while, but they are now out in the wilderness. And I think that the numbers are very clear that for them to get their mojo back, figure out their identity, it would be to embrace these policies. That might have been more debatable back then. It doesn't seem debatable now, but is it possible? Are the Democrats at a point where winning is, again, important enough to change what they are?
So here's how things are going to go, if I'm right. Number one, when we get to the 2028 primary to pick who the next Democratic candidate is, and that's the mother of all battles. I don't know that there's going to be a more important election in my lifetime than the 2028 Democratic primary. Because if we pick the right candidate, we'll easily win the general election. If we pick the wrong candidate, it might kill the party. And so in that primary, Pete Buttigieg and people like him will pretend to be economic populists. And they will pretend one more time that they're going to do these bills when they are not going to do them at all. Okay. Uh-huh. And they have no plan to do them. And then mainstream media will lie on behalf of Buttigieg and all his clones. And they will say, the only one who could do this bill is Pete Buttigieg. He's so well-educated and he speaks Norwegian and blah, 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 blah. And they'll do overwhelming propaganda on behalf of the new next corporate Democratic robot. Right.
But it'll matter less because the information share that mainstream has is on a steady decline while people like yourself and people online on all sides of things are only getting more and more of people's attention and influence. So that's another thing that might be very different.
Exactly. But this time around, mainstream media is hurt and their power is reduced. Online media is ascendant and we have three more years to grow. By the time we get to the 2028 primary, that's when online media hopefully will be beating mainstream media enough that they'll be turning to us for, wait, what are the people thinking? How, which direction are the voters going? Who are the thought leaders, et cetera? And most importantly, they will not be able to contain the issue of corruption. My whole lifetime, mainstream media has lied systematically to the American people and told them that there is no corruption, that the politicians are honorable people who are having policy debates in the Senate and the House. That's nonsense. Nonsense. I can show you definitively, and that we do on the Young Turks every day, here's where the money comes from. Here's the results.
Mm-hmm.
We will tell you ahead of time which bill will pass and which bill won't. I can tell you which bills aren't going to pass because whoever has more money wins every time. And the liars in mainstream media pretend that it's an actual debate. When that is exposed, their candidate's chance of winning is greatly reduced. And part of the reason that I set up Rebellion PAC is so we can defeat their number one talking point. Their talking point that took down Bernie was not that he was too far left. Democratic voters actually agree with Bernie's policies almost completely, right? And so they knew they couldn't beat him on policy. So they went with, he can't win. If you pick Bernie, Trump's going to win. Only Hillary can win. Only Biden can win. Only Kamala can win. Well, number one, we've already proven that they're losers. They can't win at all. If you pick another corporate robot like them, you're begging for a loss. You want to give Trump more power. You want to give MAGA more power.
Well, maybe 3 or 4 years after that, we'll catch the echo of that in Canada. Because right now, like, we are basically reduced to a two-party system right now. If the NDP could have mounted a more of an economic populist case in the last election, you could lay a lot of blame at the leadership level. I don't know how much it has to do with identity politics or just the wrong guy delivering the message or what. But now they are so diminished and reduced, it almost feels like it doesn't matter what their message is. And so that puts us more in an American context where if there's going to be a populist economic left message, it would come from rival flanks within the Liberal Party, which almost feels unimaginable at this point because they are ascendant. They're on borrowed time. They were essentially fired by Canadian voters, but then they were saved by Trump. I don't know that they took that lesson, and I feel like they might be on borrowed time. You know, who did we vote for here? The guy used to run Brookfield, the moneyed class, international, World Bank like this. We moved very far away from anything resembling a Bernie Sanders or an AOC in a very Canadian way. And people are feeling like right now, like, well, maybe what we need is a center-left conservative in this time of chaos. If the Canadian voter does not get what they want out of this guy, I think that the conservatives will figure that out. I don't know what happens to the whole world of policies that you've dedicated yourself to propelling in America. Like in Canada, it feels like through almost like a random roll of the dice, those ideas are about as far on the back burner as I can remember them ever being. And the only thing I can think of that would reverse that at this point would be if there's a major rupture in American politics, in a reversal of the typical dynamic where Canada is put on this pedestal as, look, they've got universal health care. Why can't we follow them? If they can have it, why can't we? It would almost have to flip entirely, and America would have to be leading the way. Like, we're in a sci-fi hypothesis right now. It feels like everything very rapidly shifted. We're off the map of anything that I've seen in Canadian politics before.
So I don't know enough about Carney and the party, and so he might be able to adjust. He might have some views that I'm not aware of, et cetera. But if he goes in that corporatist direction that you're describing, I will guarantee a loss in the future. Guaranteed. People already have corporatism. They already hate corporatism. That's why people are like, I don't get it. Why do everybody keep swinging wildly left, right, Argentina, Mexico, Brazil, and it goes on and on. Everybody's swinging left, right, Bernie, Trump, right? That's because they're not trying to go left or right. They're trying to go for change. And they're desperate for change. Why? Because we all live under corporate rule, and corporations are squeezing the life out of all of us. Neoliberal rule, same thing as corporate rule, has taken over the world. So if Carney goes in that direction, the Canadian people will hate it. They will absolutely hate it. And it'll give NDP a chance to rise back up if they focus purely on economic populism. Look, if you're just trying to get votes, the reason why it's hard for those of us on the populist left to win is because of mainstream media. Corporate media is our number one enemy. They do overwhelming propaganda and marketing for establishment and corporate politicians. But if we can get past them, and now we're all beginning to get past them, once those gates come down, if you want to get voters, it's not going to be hard. You just promise them things for them instead of for the super rich. And the people don't want to vote for just giving everything to the super rich. They want to vote for things for themselves and their family that they desperately need. It's not that complicated. The only thing that makes it complicated is that almost all of our politicians and almost all of our mainstream media are a bunch of crooks who love the corruption. And by the way, in America, where does the money in politics go? It goes to ads in mainstream media. So they are the biggest beneficiaries of corruption, and that is why they never, ever talk about it.
And that is our show for today. Thank you all for listening to it. You can email me about it at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Cenk, where can people find you?
You can type in TYT at almost any platform that you're on. It doesn't matter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Just type in TYT as in The Young Turks, and you'll find us. But you can go to TYT.com, and obviously that's the central place where you can watch us.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Tristan Capicchione. Our director of audio is Max Collins, who also did the fact check for this episode. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by SoCult. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Are you someone or know of someone who is affected by vision loss? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind. From technology training to public awareness to, most importantly, peer support, these are just a few services they offer to help their members achieve their full potential. Come see how we can raise their potential more by visiting ccbbcyukon.com.